On this week's episode of The Freenoter, what is a freenote and why would you want to do it?
And also this week, we'll take a look at real hero of speaking, our friend Mitch Joel, and how he sells his expertise without ever selling from the stage.
And we will introduce the Pellet of the Week, a celebratory cocktail we call the T&T.
All that and more on this week's edition of The Freenoter.
Cheers.
So this is the first episode of The Freenoter, and I think it's appropriate to talk about what the heck is a freenote, because it's a made-up fakey word.
It's a good made-up freaky word.
I know. Oh, it's a good, freaky. Gonna get freaky word.
Yes?
Yeah, so we made up the word freenote to describe the difference between someone who gets paid to keynote and someone who goes out and speaks for free, which I do a lot. That's essentially, at this point, 99% of my speaking is speaking for free. And you're paid to speak most of the time, but you see the case for a free note now and then, I assume.
Oh, absolutely. And I spent about 15 years of my, I guess, 19-year speaking career as a freenoter. So it's very near and dear to my heart.
So as a, as you like to call yourself, a recovering marketer,
I'm still an active marketer. So
yes,
yeah,
but you do laps every now and then.
Yes, I do.
There's all kinds of things you can do in marketing, right? Like you've got X amount of dollars and X amount of time, and you could spend that time and money putting up billboards and subway signs and social media advertising and radio and TV and all that. Why the heck would you want to do this?
Well, I mean, tactically, there's, if you think about it from the perspective of just exposure to the people who want to hear from you, I mean, in my mind, there's very few things that are better than speaking to do that. And I mean, if you were to stop and calculate how long it would take, like one of your salespeople to get in front of, let's say 100, 200 people, you know, even if it's just 40 or 50, that's kind of the number of people that would be in a breakout session at a conference. I mean, think about how much time it would take a single salesperson to get that much time, 30 minutes, 45 minutes in front of, even if it's just 50 people. I mean, that realistically could be 6 months of a salesperson's work. But a freenote is all of those people are in a room, and not only are they in a room to listen to you speak about the thing that your business is about, most of the time they have self-selected to be there. And I just don't think that there is anything that compares from a marketing or a sales opportunity standpoint to that. Just simple time and power when it comes to qualified leads.
Yeah, and I've really come to appreciate that exact power of getting in front of exactly the right people. It takes time though to get, and that's something that we'll talk about on future episodes of The Freenoter as the arc of the show unfolds about picking the right events and getting in front of the right people. But you know, when you think about all of the things that you could do with your time and treasure, speaking is for some people, I think it's a very natural component. It's a very natural marketing and sales tactic. From our perspective, like with my company, Edison, it's kind of like 80% of our sales and marketing. We don't even have a full-time salesperson. We essentially go out, give talks, produce original research, and wait for the phone to ring. And I don't know if that's great sales and marketing or not, but the phone's been ringing for 25 years, so it must do something.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's this beautiful intersection of outbound and inbound marketing simultaneously, right? I mean, because you are putting something out there consciously, but it's a long form piece of content. And I used to give a talk actually on how I thought speaking was content's last frontier. I think it's a wildly underused avenue for people. But at the same time, because generally, if you are in a breakout session and you're freenoting in a breakout session, like I said before, people are self-selecting to see you. So it is also inbound. And so to me, there's this just, I can't think of any other place that happens. Not only is there kind of that intersection. So somehow we need to kind of come up with an outbound, inbound, like something that's in between. It's like transom bound. I don't know. Like what's in between in and out? Because I think that's exactly where speaking potentially exists. And I don't know. I think that's incredibly valuable.
When you say it like that, it seems like a no-brainer, but surely it's not right for everyone.
Well, it's not right. So, oh God, yes. <It's true. laughs> All right.
It's not right for you, Tom.
No. Well, I mean, so here's the thing that I think that's super important to understand. I mean, I think a lot of times when people are like, oh, yeah, that's right. We could talk and we could use that as a sales opportunity. And oh my Lord, that happens too much. I mean, the first thing to understand is that as soon as you sell from the stage, you are pretty much dead person walking to the meeting organizer and the meeting professional. Even if we all understand that that's part of the reason why you're speaking, the minute the audience starts to feel like you're selling to them, you are dead to them. You're dead to them. You're dead to the meeting planner who brought you in, or the conference that said yes. And so I think, it's absolutely not a good fit for someone who can't accept having to sit back and let the inbound piece happen. And I think that's really critical. A way that I've often described it is we have to understand that an audience kind of has two mindsets. So with marketing and sales, there's all sorts of different ways to think of the sales journey or the marketing funnel or whatever. But ultimately, I think it's two phases. There's a learning phase and then there's a doing phase. There's a phase when you're gathering information and there's a phase when you're acting on it. By and large, when people are coming to a conference, they are in a learning phase. And because in order for that message to work for them, they have to hear the kind of message that they're looking for in order for that kind of that matchup to work. The minute you try to give them a doing message when they're in a learning mindset, you're just creating trouble for yourself because they hate that. So that's the task, is that you have to be able to match the meaning to the mindset. And if you're not willing to do that, it's really not a good fit. It's also really not a good fit if you're not willing to do the work to be actually a good speaker.
I've seen some bad freenoters, and they do exactly what you're talking about. And we'll talk a little bit more about this on the next episode, but they sell from the stage sort of actively. And I think what they don't realize is, and I'm going to science you here for a moment.
Oh, baby.
Yeah. It's time for some science. Science time. You know how that thing in your neck that's your breathing and eating hole?
Okay.
It's somewhere in between your sternum. And
there's two holes there. Just to science you back, that's actually two different holes. But okay.
Well, yes, okay. But there's one general hole that leads to them called your mouth.
Okay, that's on your face. I'm a little worried if that's on your neck.
All right, look, I never studied astronomy. But that hole in your neck that is between your mouth and your lungs and your stomach, it doesn't do both at the same time, right? You can't breathe and swallow at the same time. Yeah. You can't eat and breathe at the same time. Mm. That hole in your neck decides, okay, it's air time. Boom. I got some air for you. Or it's food time. And that's what keeps food out of your lungs, right?
# food time.
Food time. Well, that's what happens, I think, in when people go to see a talk, they are there to learn.
Yeah.
And if they are there to learn, and you turn that into an opportunity, as you see it, to sell your stuff, you are trying to get them to eat when they're trying to breathe. So I love being a freenoter, and it took me some time to get over this. And, you know, you and I are friends with a lot of professional speakers, and they get paid a lot of money. Mm. And, you know, you can sort of get that regret, like, why aren't I getting those big fees? But we actually, when you're freenoting, you're not competing with them at all. You're speaking in different situations. You're speaking in different types of conferences, or at least, you know, in many cases, you're a breakout speaker as opposed to a keynoter, but not exclusively. I mean, I've certainly, we've both given keynotes that are free notes and so on. So when you're doing that, though, you have this great opportunity to show your quality. Mm. And that's what's really compelling to me about a free note. And yes, they don't always pay directly. And so that makes it difficult to kind of, you know, make the case to your boss or who you report to or your company that this is worthwhile. It is worthwhile if you do the work.
Yeah, I think that's a topic for a future episode as well, is like, how can you calculate the worth of that? But I think when it comes down to that original question you asked, like, what is a freenote? I mean, a freenote is a useful piece of content delivered to an audience that will be as useful to them as it is to you.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, and I like the point that you made earlier about the fact that it's a self-selected audience. Mm. Like and that's something I think when you're giving a talk and you're up there, you're not getting paid for it, and you're slaving away trying to provide value for people, that you can easily forget about. It can easily slip past you while you're on stage. That Actually, they want to be there. Everybody who is out there, generally, they want you to succeed. They really do want the information that you have to impart. They've self-selected. And that's something that I think other forms of sales, especially, that's not necessarily true, right? That you have an audience that is not just receptive, but actually wants you to succeed because your success is their success.
Right. I mean, it is a blog post made real and live. I mean, that to me is what a great free note is, right? I mean, it is, you know, saying before, is this intersection between inbound and outbound. I mean, the best blog posts, you know, to quote our friend Marcus Sheridan, are those that answer an audience question. And I think the same thing is true of a free note. It should answer an audience question. It should actively do that. So when I made that point about, you know, a great free note is equally useful to the audience, is as useful to the audience as it is to you. I think that's one of those things that you have to take into account when you're really thinking about it, is how do I make sure that it's useful to them? And here's the key. It can't be how you think it's useful to them. It has to be how they think it's useful to them. And I think ultimately that's where the shape of a free note starts to differ a little bit from a keynote, because, you know, a lot of times a keynote, you know, a paid keynote is, you know, here's the thing. There's a lot of times that people are like, well, you know, you either are paying for the keynote, you know, that's why you get paid. And that person doesn't have to, you know, they're like, the product is the message. And so they don't have to sell anything. And that's why it's worth it. Or they'll set that up as a false choice with, well, the people that you don't pay, they have to sell on the back end. And I think that's complete bupkis, because I think anybody who's speaking is trying to sell something. If you're a keynoter, and exclusively a keynote, then what you're trying to sell is the next paid gig. And so you have to find a balance of content and performance and all of that. I think if you're a free noter, you absolutely have to sell the services of the business that you offer, but you have to understand that the way to do that is to let the services sell themselves, which means you have to construct a talk that allows people to end the talk saying, huh, I understand how to do this myself. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for teaching me that. And since you've told me exactly how I can do it myself, I'd actually really rather work with you to do that. So how can I do that? I mean, that to me is the ultimate free note, whereas you have given them the answer to their question. You have told them how to do the thing that you want them to do. You've even given them the explanation of the approach that your company takes. But you've done it so well, and you've done it from a perspective where you clearly understand their world so well that it just seems easier to do it with you. And I think, to me, that's the ultimate free note, where you have empowered someone to do it themselves, but you've established yourself as enough of an expert that they want to do it with you.
So two things about what you just said. Number one, at the beginning of that, that was a very credible Ed Sullivan impersonation from the Ed Sullivan Show for the octogenarians in our audience. And I know you're out there.
How do you know it's not me? I mean, I'm very well preserved.
Yeah, you are.
Pickled.
We'll get to that. Number two, shout out to the word bupkis. Don't hear that enough. But yeah, I completely agree with that. And in case this is helpful to someone, I want to share my personal freenoting story about why it's important to me and why I got into it. And, you know, this may surprise people, but I'm a real introvert. I'm a really introverted person. And if you put me in the middle of like cocktail hour at, you know, a networking hour at a conference or something like that, I'm generally not going to talk to people, right? Because I don't like people. It's amazing we met, frankly, because you're a people.
Well, we didn't meet at a cocktail hour.
No,
for sure.
We did not meet at a cocktail hour. Yeah, but in general, at a conference or something, I'm a crap networker, because I'm not gonna be the person that barges into a group and says, you know, hey, what do you do? You know, I'm not that guy. I discovered early on.
You want them to come to you.
I want them to come to me, and I discovered early on that if I can give a good talk about what it is that we do, if I can give a good speech and I can do that before the networking event or the cocktail hour, that people will come to me. And, you know, I'm not a complete wallflower. I clean up okay. But it's more comfortable.
Well, I think so.
Thank you. It's more comfortable for me when people approach me and ask me a question. And then I'm responsible for a lot of sales for our company. Like, I have to do that. And I'm not the kind of person that's just going to pick up the phone and call people saying, hey, I noticed you downloaded our white paper. I'm not going to do that. I've discovered that speaking, and I give, you know, I think this year I'll give over 50 free notes, that people will come up to me. And that's a great opportunity to show the quality of thought that we have as a company and talk about what we do in a way that I don't have to do from the stage. So it became like an introvert survival tactic for me.
Yeah. I actually remember pretty clearly when I first saw the potential of being a freenoter, and that's when I saw a freenoter doing their work pretty well. I mean, they were doing exactly what I was talking about earlier, where they put on, you know, it was an event where they were offering a talk that was an answer to a question I had at the time. At the time, I was the head of fundraising communications for Harvard Medical School. Story for another day. And she was talking about social media, if I remember correctly. And this was in the early days, like 2008, 2009. I was watching and the content was useful and the delivery was okay. I mean, it was better than average, but I remember looking at what she was doing and saying, oh, there's a real opportunity here. Cause I was looking at this whole group of people just like me who had sat in this room to hear her talk. And I knew based on the background that I had and the level of, you know, presenting experience and all of the other things that I'd done that I was like, well, I think maybe we could do this too. And so, you know, I think my first free note talks were actually on behalf of Harvard Medical School, where I, as a fellow communications director, a fellow development communications director, went and spoke at an association conference about the work that we were doing there. And what was interesting is at the time, there was no direct benefit to the medical school. I mean, there was a benefit to the company that we worked with to produce those communications. So that was useful to them. But it was just really, I mean, I originally started it because it was useful to the people I was talking to. And I think that's the kind of mental framework to bring into all of this always, is that a free note has to be useful first and foremost.
And that's, I think, a great way to kind of end this segment, because if you're listening to this and you're thinking, I'm not a great public speaker, like we've all seen people who are fantastic extemporaneous speakers that can get up and they seem like they're winging it, but they're fantastic and they're entertaining. But that's not a prerequisite to be a freenoter, to be an effective freenoter, I don't think. It's really about the content and the ideas. And I remember watching Monica Lewinsky give her TED talk. I mean, that's a really big high stakes talk, right? A TED talk. And she's essentially reading it. And so if you are watching that expecting, you know, some kind of great performance from an actor, that's not what you got with her. But what you got was an incredibly compelling speech, because she wrote it and it was compelling and it delivered an idea very, very powerfully. Mm-hmm. She did not have to be an incredible performer for that actual talk to leave an impact on you. And I think that's an important thing for people who are considering freenoting as a sales and marketing tool, to understand that you don't have to be a stand-up comic. You don't have to be a great actor. You don't have to be an incredible performer. You do have to do some work there, but that's not necessarily the most important thing, because you and I have both seen TED Talks and TEDx Talks from people that you would not call great performers that were incredibly compelling.
I think that's really interesting. So I think that may be one of those additional answers to what's the difference between a freenote and a keynote. So our good friend, an amazing keynoter who started as a freenoter, Drew Davis, aka Drew Davis, talks about how for keynoting, paid keynoting, the order of what's important is what he calls the fee structure. Fame is the F. E is entertainment. And then the second E is education or expertise. And that's what audiences care about in that order for a keynote. What's really interesting is that for a free note, I think it's actually EF. I think that it's really the content trumps anything else, that people will forgive a huge amount of delivery if the content is really, really good. And of course, that's going to be a topic for future conversations here. I think we have all seen that over and over again. I think your Monica Lewinsky example is a great point, which is that if the content is really strong, if the content answers a question that the audience has, is it, if it doesn't overtly sell, if it is different, if it is answer to something somebody wants in a way that they haven't heard before, the audience will forgive a huge amount of delivery. And I think that's really, key thing for people who are thinking A, of free noting at all. But B, like it's a really interesting way to think about how do you move from free noting to T&E noting to keynoting, which for some people is a progression they want to have.
Okay. What's T&E noting? That sounds kinky.
So T&E noting is, so free noting is basically where you, and for all intents and purposes, you are paying to go to the conference because you are getting nothing from the organizers whatsoever. T&E noting is the T&E there is travel and expenses, meaning that you are being paid by the conference. They're paying for your travel, your hotel, and probably some level of per diem or something like that. But basically it's travel and expenses, but you're not getting paid a fee to speak. And then keynoting, when you're a keynoter, you usually get all of that.
All of that.
Yeah.
Well, and that's a great segue to talk about this week's real hero of speaking. And this week, every week we're going to talk about somebody that we know in the field of speaking. They're generally paid speakers, but they have something to teach us all. And I'm a freenoter, and I'm always learning from people who are at the top of their game in paid speaking and can incorporate and try to incorporate some of the things that they do. So this week's real hero of speaking is our good friend Mitch Joel. Mitch Joel, to me, is a tremendous keynoter. I'm not going to call him a freenoter because he's a very successful paid speaker, but he does something that I think any freenoter should really emulate. So Mitch is a thought leader. He's the author of 6 Pixels of Separation, Control-Alt-Delete, and has really one of the longest-running podcasts in the business space, is the 6 Pixels of Separation podcast. But for many, many years, Mitch was out there representing his agency, and never when he spoke did I ever hear him sell his agency. Did I ever hear him talk about, well, if you hire us, we can help you do that? But he was clearly representing that agency. What he was doing out there, I think, was really proving his quality.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think the thing to understand is that for many intents and purposes, but not for the current ones, I mean, Mitch started as a freenoter, and I think he openly says that to us and to other folks, is that, you know, the reason why he speaks has traditionally been for marketing business development for the agency. And yet, to your point, he's always been really, really good about doing that. And he's avoided the traps that we were talking about earlier and really fulfilled the value proposition that we were talking about earlier as well, which is he gives people what they want. He gives them answers to the questions they're asking. And in Mitch's case, they're asking questions like, what does the future look like? And Mitch, as a futurist, as someone really constantly paying attention to those trends, he gives them that answer in a way that is entertaining and interesting, you know, and I think that's the key for any great speaker, is to find that intersection between what's informative, but also what's interesting, inspirational, entertaining. And by the way, like, it's always clear that you could hire Mitch, but it's never a sales pitch. And I think that's what I think we both respect so much about him. In fact, I've learned one of, you know, I think most powerful techniques from watching Mitch, as you have, which is he just usually drops in one line or two that says something along the lines of, you know, when I'm working with clients, this is the thing they struggle with the most. I mean, it's when I'm working with clients, it's like 5 words in the whole talk, but it's enough to let the audience know that, oh, I can hire you to help me solve that problem. And he never says, you have to hire me to solve that problem. He just lets you know that he's available to help solve that problem. The other thing that I think he does that's brilliant, and I think that is also a trap that anybody, you know, is a freenoter wants to avoid, is that he doesn't bait and switch. There's nothing about the way that he talks about what you're talking about where you feel like you have to hire him in order to get it. And that's a thing I see a lot, and I wish I didn't, with particularly with freenoters, but sometimes the keynoters too, which is they'll lead you right up to the answer to a question. And they're like, and if you give me like X, Y, or Z, or if you buy my book, or if you sign up for this webinar, then I'll tell you exactly what to do. Please don't do that. For the love of all that's holy. Like, that's, we need a name for that.
So in the show notes for this episode, I've posted a link to a 20-minute talk that Mitch gave at Inbound, which is a big conference done here in Boston, where you and I live. called WTF, which stands for What the Five-ish, because this is a clean podcast for families. And it's five-ish things.
Gather around the fire, Jens.
Gather around the fire and have a cocktail with us. Where he talks about sort of five-ish trends for the future that everybody has to think about. And to your point, Tamsin, he never talks about how my agency can help you navigate that. But you do get a little bit of a sense that these points, these aspects of marketing for the future and consumer behavior in the future are complex enough that you probably need a guide. And he doesn't say that guide has to be me, that guide has to be my agency. But when you walk out of that talk, you're either empowered or you know that you need some help. And he and his agency would be certainly top of mind for people that could help you with that, which makes, I think, Mitch an incredibly effective freenoter, whether or not he's being paid, because he never sells from the stage. So this is the point of the show. This might be my favorite point of the show.
Well... which point of the show is that?
It's the point of the show where we drink, honey.
Oh, I thought you meant like existentially was the point of the show.
Oh, I don't even know the point of the show. That's a pretty tall order. No, it is the time of the show where we talk about our craft cocktail of the week, but we have an even better term for it, and that is
the pellet.
I love that.
I do too. What's, but it's not ours.
No. So what is the pellet?
So the pellet comes from Nilufer Merchant, friend, client, entrepreneur, TED Talk speaker extraordinaire, who shared with me once upon a time that after she gives a talk, she likes to treat herself to what she calls a pellet, named after how a rat, after it has successfully traversed a maze, gets the pellet. So we have turned, she says, do the work, get the pellet. We've turned the drink itself into the pellet, and thus we have the pellet.
The pellet, and her pellet is a scotch and french fries, right?
Yes, scotch and french fries.
Yes. And I want to point out, especially for our younger listeners, that this is not a show condoning the rewarding of speaking with alcohol. It's just a show condoning alcohol. So this week's pellet is a drink that's near and dear to our hearts. It's called the TNT. So this is a drink that that Tamsin and I first had a version of at Gotham in New York, right? Restaurant, Gotham Bar and Grill. It was on their Thanksgiving menu, I think.
That's right.
We loved it, and we went back, and they took it off the menu, and they didn't even carry the ingredients for it. So we brought it back to Boston to our favorite bartender, Sterling Jackson, at the Avery Bar at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Boston, for you folks who are going to visit. And she made it her own.
Yes. And yes, we recognize how difficult, how ridiculous it is that our neighborhood bar is the Ritz-Carlton. But we promise you, it's because it's literally a block and a half away from our house.
Yes, we're not rich. We're lazy. let's be clear.
Sure words were never spoken.
So our friend Sterling put this on the menu with one little twist, and she called it the TNT, named after your two favorite podcasters who you are listening to now. And the TNT, which we're having right now. Cheers, my love.
Cheers, darling.
A great cheers. This is a fantastic drink. It's a spin on the Manhattan.
Yes.
It's made with 2 ounces of Buffalo Trace bourbon. Very, very particular about the bourbon in that one.
Yeah, it's a good bourbon.
1 ounce of a Pedro Jimenez style sherry.
Jimenez with an X.
Doesn't
it make it Jimenez?
No, it's Jimenez.
Well, if I'm drinking, then it's a Jimenez.
That's horrible. I don't even know who you are. So 2 ounces of Buffalo Trace, 1 ounce of a Pedro Jimenez sherry. And then a couple dashes each of black walnut bitters and orange bitters, which give it a complexity.
And is it shaken or stirred, Tom Webster?
It is stirred because it is all spirits.
It is.
You shake the things with the fruit juice and the citrus, and you stir the things that are spirit forward. That's what I understand.
That's right. And we like to serve it up neat with a twist.
Strained with a twist of lemon, you know. Express the oils, as they say.
I think I could describe my day. I'm strained with a twist of lemon.
Strained and bitter. A little acerbic.
But with a nice sweet finish.
And that's the palate of the week, the TNT. Next week, we're going to build on this conversation, and we're going to continue to look at the components of a free note. What makes a great free note, and where can free notes go wrong?
We'll also visit with another hero of speaking, and we'll have the last word on the last word.
That sounds like a cocktail.
Oh, and it is delicious. That's next week on The Free Noter.
Cheers.
Cheers.